Blog Talk Radio.
All right, so I'm doing some research as we're talking and communicating here on whether the pilgrims had slaves. Now, don't forget that there were waves of people that came to America. The first from Europe, the first, putting aside Leif Erikson, the first group hits, it's Jamestown, right? And then they're there for gold. They're there to find out if all of the rumors are correct. In Virginia, they established themselves in a bad area, and somehow they figured out how to build a home in a swamp, and that the tidal, the way the tide and the river that they were next to moved, their effluent, the waste product that they created, would go out and then come back in and kind of pollute the area. There was a lot of disease there, and they didn't thrive. And then you've got the Plymouth colony. Now, the Plymouth colony is the model of America. It puts an indelible imprint upon the continent for all future generations. And it is really, you can't really understand our mindset without understanding the earliest pilgrims. Pilgrims was a term that was put on later, but a pilgrim obviously is a person who's searching for a holy site, a holy land. And so these people were coming over as basically refugees from religious oppression. Now, 1981, New York Times prints a very short article. Plymouth historian says a black person settled at Pilgrim's Colony. And Massachusetts, Plymouth, Massachusetts, August 19th. Historians say today they had enough evidence to suggest that one of the early settlers of the Plymouth Colony in New England was a black man. Robert Martin said his name was, who director of programs at Plymouth Plantation, said a man by the name of Abraham Pierce was black and apparently owned land, voted, and had equal standing with other members of the community. So by combing through the colony's records, researchers believe that Pierce, spelled the same as our own Steve Pierce, P-E-A-R-C-E, settled in Plymouth in 1623, 3 years after the first settler arrived on the Mayflower, listed as Blackamoor. The only reference to Pierce's race is a colony record dating 643, listing the names of men available to serve in the Plymouth militia. The list said Abraham Pierce Blackamoor. Now, don't forget the name Moore was applied to the Muslims, so it would refer to someone of darker skin, Blackamoor. I'll have to do some research on that. So anyway, he died. He was a freeholder and voting member of the community and died in 1673. So it was the later Puritans who accepted the slavery that was established in Britain. All right. Was the Civil War about slavery? This is from Prager University and was published August 10th, 2015, about a year ago.
Of slavery.
Hold on 1 second.
Was the American Civil War fought because of slavery? More than 150 years later, this remains a controversial question. Why? Because many people don't want to believe that the citizens of the southern states were willing to fight and die to preserve a morally repugnant institution. There has to be another reason, we are told. Well, there isn't. The evidence is clear and overwhelming. Slavery was, by a wide margin, the single most important cause of the Civil War for both sides. Before the presidential election of 1860, a South Carolina newspaper warned that the issue before the country was the extinction of slavery and called on all who were not prepared to surrender the institution to act. Shortly after Abraham Lincoln's victory, they did. The secession documents of every Southern state made clear crystal clear that they were leaving the Union in order to protect their peculiar institution of slavery, a phrase that at the time meant the thing special to them. The vote to secede was 169-0 in South Carolina, 166-7 in Texas, 84-15 in Mississippi. In no southern state was the vote close. Alexander Stephens of Georgia, the Confederacy's vice president, clearly articulated the views of the South in March 1861. Our new government, he said, was founded on slavery. Its foundations are laid. Its cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, submission to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition. Yet despite the evidence, many continue to argue that other factors superseded slavery as the cause of the Civil War. Some argue that the South only wanted to protect states' rights. But this raises an obvious question. The states' rights to what? Wasn't it to maintain and spread slavery? Moreover, states' rights was not an exclusive Southern issue. All the states, North and South, sought to protect their rights. Sometimes they petitioned the federal government. Sometimes they quarreled with each other. In fact, Mississippians complained that New York had too strong a concept of states' rights because it would not allow Delta planters to bring their slaves to Manhattan. The South was preoccupied with states' rights because it was preoccupied first and foremost with retaining slavery. Some argue that the cause of the war was economic. The North was industrial and the South agrarian. And so, the two lived in such economically different societies that they could no longer stay together. Not true. In the middle of the 19th century, both North and South were agrarian societies. In fact, the North produced far more food crops than did the South. But Northern farmers had to pay their farmhands, who were free to come and go as they pleased, while Southern plantation owners exploited slaves over whom they had total control. And it wasn't just plantation owners who supported slavery. The slave society was embraced by all classes in the South. The rich had multiple motivations for wanting to maintain slavery, but so did the poor, non-slaveholding whites. The peculiar institution ensured that they did not fall to the bottom rung of the social ladder. That's why another argument that the Civil War couldn't have been about slavery because so few people owned slaves has little merit. Finally, many have argued that President Abraham Lincoln fought the war to keep the Union together, not to end slavery. That was true at the outset of the war, but he did so with the clear knowledge that keeping the Union together meant either spreading slavery to all the states, an unacceptable solution, or vanquishing it altogether. In a famous campaign speech in 1858, Lincoln said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." What was it that divided the country? It was slavery and only slavery. He continued, "I believe this government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. It will become all one thing or all the other." Lincoln's view never changed, and as the war progressed, the moral component, ending slavery, became more and more fixed in his mind. His Emancipation Proclamation in 1863 turned that into law. Slavery is the great shame of America's history. No one denies that. But it's to America's everlasting credit that it fought the most devastating war in its history in order to abolish slavery. As a soldier, I am proud that the United States Army, my army, defeated the Confederates. In its finest hour, soldiers wearing this blue uniform, almost 200,000 of them, former slaves themselves, destroyed chattel slavery, freed 4 million men, women, and children from human bondage, and saved the United States of America. I'm Colonel Ty Sigley, professor and head, Department of History at the United States Military Academy, West Point, for Prager University.
All right, so there is that. Take another break here for your local news. Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450. Well, by us, it's
Take away my sadness. Ease my troubles, that's what you do.
I did some more research, and I got into the Pilgrim Hall Museum, and it said that apparently when the Pilgrims first got there, there were no slaves, but by the, by the 1680s, or by the 1670s, at least, there were slaves were being brought over. And so it says slavery was practiced intermittently in the Plymouth area after the 1670s. So the first wave plantation would have been the 50 years, I guess. There were black people that were living there free. And franchised in the community. They were voters, et cetera. By 1715, this says that there were as many as 2,000 slaves in Massachusetts. And this had to do with the fact that there were large companies that were moving products between England and America, and England had a slavery there, which had been in existence for quite a while. All right, here is another clip. The Inconvenient Truth About the Democratic Party, and this is by a black female professor.
When you think about racial equality and civil rights, which political party comes to mind?
This is Carol Swan, and I'm professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University. Let me start this over.
When you think about racial equality and civil rights, which political party comes to mind, the Republicans or the Democrats? Most people would probably say the Democrats, but this answer is incorrect. Since its founding in 1829, the Democratic Party has fought against every major civil rights initiative and has a long history of discrimination. The Democratic Party defended slavery, started the Civil War, opposed Reconstruction, founded the Ku Klux Klan, imposed segregation, perpetrated lynchings, and fought against the Civil Rights Acts of the 1950s and 1960s. In contrast, the Republican Party was founded in 1854 as an anti-slavery party. Its mission was to stop the spread of slavery into the new Western territories with the aim of abolishing it entirely. This effort, however, was dealt a major blow by the Supreme Court in the 1857 case, Dred Scott versus Sandfoot. The court ruled that slaves aren't citizens, they're property. The seven justices who voted in favor of slavery, all Democrats, the two justices who dissented, both Republicans. The slavery question was, of course, ultimately resolved by a bloody civil war. The commander-in-chief during that war was the first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, the man who freed the slaves. 6 days after the Confederate Army surrendered, John Wilkes Booth, a Democrat, assassinated President Lincoln. Lincoln's vice president, a Democrat named Andrew Johnson, assumed the presidency. But Johnson adamantly opposed Lincoln's plan to integrate the newly freed slaves into the South's economic and social order. Johnson and the Democratic Party were unified in their opposition to the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, the 14th Amendment, which gave blacks citizenship, and the 15th Amendment, which gave blacks the vote. All three passed only because of universal Republican support. During the era of Reconstruction, federal troops stationed in the South helped secure rights for the newly freed slaves. Hundreds of black men were elected to Southern state legislatures as Republicans. and 22 black Republicans served in the U.S. Congress by 1900. The Democrats did not elect a black man to Congress until 1935. But after Reconstruction ended, when the federal troops went home, Democrats roared back into power in the South. They quickly reestablished white supremacy across the region with measures like black codes, laws that restricted the ability of blacks to own property and run businesses, and they imposed poll taxes and literacy tests used to subvert black citizens' right to vote. And how was all of this enforced? By terror, much of it instigated by the Ku Klux Klan, founded by a Democrat, Nathan Bedford Forrest. As historian Eric Foner, himself a Democrat, notes, in effect, the Klan was a military force serving the interests of the Democratic Party. President Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat, shared many views with the Klan. He resegregated many federal agencies and even screened the first movie ever played at the White House, the racist film, The Birth of a Nation, originally entitled The Klansman. A few decades later, the only serious congressional opposition to the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964 came from Democrats. 80% of Republicans in Congress supported the bill, less than 70% of Democrats did. Democratic senators filibustered the bill for 75 days until Republicans mustered the few extra votes needed to break the logjam. And when all of their efforts to enslave blacks, keep them enslaved, and then keep them from voting had failed, the Democrats came up with a new strategy. If black people are going to vote, they might as well vote for Democrats, as President Lyndon Johnson was purported to have said about the Civil Rights Act, I'll have them voting Democrat for 200 years. So now, the Democratic Party prospers on the votes of the very people it has spent much of its history oppressing. Democrats falsely claim that the Republican Party is the villain, when in reality, it's the failed policies of the Democratic Party that have kept blacks down. Massive government welfare has decimated the black family. Opposition to school choice has kept them trapped in failing schools. Politically correct policing has left black neighborhoods defenseless against violent crime. So when you think about racial equality and civil rights, which political party should come to mind? I'm Carol Swain, professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University for Prager University.
Information. 743, we'll get you some weather now, 523-1450.
All the morning sun and all its glory. Which is there with hope and comfort. And you fill my life with laughter. You can make it better. Is my trouble, that's what you do.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, that was the most fantastic thing I've heard in a long time, except for the one you played before it about the cause of the Civil War. That was really interesting, really interesting. I'm glad that the Democratic Party has come to its senses in modern times.
What do they say? History is more fascinating than any novel?
Absolutely. That is such a true statement. Those were great pieces. Really loved them.
Thank you, Kathy. I hope you have a great weekend.
I'm gonna miss
you,
Kelly. Okay. I'm gonna miss you, Kelly.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. A woman was hit with a felony for toppling a Confederate statue. She was a black woman. And let me ask you this. Do you think that these Confederate statues should all be removed? And so there's two arguments. One argument is that it's a celebration of something that America has rejected long ago, which is racism, slavery and racism. The other argument is, are you going to, do you really plan on purifying history, getting rid of everything bad so people can't even ever hear about it? And we have a call here. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell's show. Who's this?
Marty.
Hey, Marty, what's up?
First of all, I just give me a knot in my stomach when I hear you talking about that you're going to be leaving next week.
Death Row Radio. Well, I mean, you know, life's full of changes. Heraclitus said all is flux. I mean, there's always changes. We have a tendency to get comfortable with stuff, but I do appreciate that. But I'm planning on doing a blog, Blog Talk Radio, folks. I'm going to get an email for you guys to email, and you can send me your information, and I'll send out a page how to get into Blog Talk Radio. I mean, I know a lot of people who listen to the show are older, and they don't have the savvy to, navigate the internet. But I appreciate that, Marty.
Okay. I want to just point out real quickly that I enjoy your show more than even Rush, way more than Glenn Beck, and even more than Savage.
No, thank you, man. Thank you.
I mean, the first thing I do when I get up in the morning is on the radio and listen to you. I just want to point out.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
I was going to say that explains your robust mental health.
Thank you. Slavery's been around for as long as there's been organized humans traveling in tribes. And I used to be a historian with in Oklahoma. And one of the things I did was study both the Comanche and the Cheyenne and the Kiowa and the Arapaho. And is everybody aware that all four of these tribes had slaves? These go to Mexico specifically to raid and get Mexican slaves. And the Comanche especially used to go into Central Texas and East Texas and raid in order to get white children and bring them back and enslave them. They worked out, they'd actually make them part of the tribe. I mean, Cynthia Ann Parker, of course, is a classic example of that, which led to her son became Quanah Parker, the last great Comanche chief. But even calling a chief in the Comanche world is not accurate. They really didn't have chiefs. And that's why it was so hard to contain the Indians, because they didn't have a military command system with a general and colonels and sergeants.
Well, obviously, yeah. The primitive tribes lacked the organization of the Europeans. That's just by definition.
Yeah, even if a 19-year-old wants to start a war party and go raid into East Texas to, burn down settlements and take slaves and get horses was the main thing they were after. They're after the Texas horses.
But the main thing is slavery. Slavery was a common factor in the ancient world. Obviously, everybody knows that the Romans had slaves, and the idea that America is uniquely evil for having had slaves. America took the system over from Britain. Now that may not be much of a defense, but it was the world that they inherited.
And we built a powerful industrial engine on it. Wrong or right, we did. I mean,
the
engine of the South has never.
Well, I mean, I would argue the slave economy is not efficient, and it destroys the economy itself. I've got another call. Anything else?
Well, I want to point out really quickly that slave was super valuable property. A healthy black male slave in $1,820 was worth today's equivalent of about $23,000.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, yeah, they're very expensive. They were treated well.
All right. Well,
in that regard.
Okay. Thanks, Marty. All right, folks. The other person, if you were calling in, call back in. The call dropped off. But all right. So slavery, a slave economy destroys the economy because a free worker cannot compete against zero wages. And that was true in America. It was true in ancient Rome. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Jason.
Good morning, Jason. Hope you're well. And what's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to call in. It's your last show. Thank you very much for everything you've done. I've really enjoyed
Jason,
it.
Jason, it's not the last show, so I don't want to put out misinformation. Next week is the last week.
Okay, good. We got one more week with you. That's wonderful.
Death Row Radio, Jason.
In terms of your question, I believe that for the same reason that Germany has not destroyed the site of Auschwitz, you know, we can't, I think it's foolish to pursue a mission of absolving ourselves from the lessons of history.
All right, but let me ask you this. Auschwitz is an obvious commentary on the inhumanity of the Nazis. The problem that the left and other people have with the Confederate stuff is it appears to be heroic. Here's General Lee on a horse raising its leg. Here is the side of a mountain with four Confederate generals. I do think that there's two arguments here.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got schools named after General Lee. So what are the children to take from that except that General Lee was someone that was admirable? How can we deal with this argument, the anger, the pain of the blacks who say every time I see this statue, I get a, you know, I get a knot in my stomach. So what do you think?
Well, I think there could be some legitimacy to that, though it does seem like it could lead to a rabbit hole where just as viably someone could bring up the topic of Woodrow Wilson. Why should anyone have to go to a school named under Woodrow Wilson who continued to segregate the
Right. So there's the question. Are we willing in this mad dash to erase all bad history? Are we willing to get rid of Washington and Jefferson? I got another call. Thanks for the call, Jason. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Yeah, Kelly, how are you?
Good. It sounds like you could use a doctor yourself, though.
Thanks. I probably could. Probably a psychological one would do it.
We'll see what we can do. So I don't recognize your name, maybe because of the call is
answering the question.
Can you turn off or walk away from your radio?
Answering the question of how do we deal with the hurt and the pain of the slavery of the past is that, you know, when you put up your statues and you put those things up, that's our history. And the issue is not that we had slavery. The issue is how did we handle the question? And the question was answered during the Civil War. And that is the way you teach it. You say, look, it was wrong, but we did the right thing.
All right, so how about removing these statues to museums to display them there? And such. I'm running out of time, so thanks for the call. All right, folks. If you're going to call in, we only have one more week, but if you have something to say that's a little bit longer, call a little bit earlier. Here's Al Sharpton.
Thomas Jefferson, he wrote,
America should stop funding the Jefferson Memorial. Is that true? The guy that wrote the introduction to the Constitution, Declaration of Independence,
a biography of Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson had slaves.
Yeah, I read it. Had slaves and children with the slaves.
Exactly.
And it does matter.
So should they take down the Jefferson Memorial?
I think that people need to understand when people that were enslaved and robbed of even the right to marry and had forced sex with their slave masters, this is personal to us. My great grandfather was a slave in South Carolina, owned by the family that ended up. Strom Thurmond was one of them. A newspaper discovered it. So this is personal. This is not some kind of removed discussion from us. Our families were victims of this. Certainly, they ought to be removed.
Therefore, everybody associated with slavery, in terms of any public monument to them.
When you look at the fact that public monuments are supported by public funds, you're asking me to subsidize the insult of my
Thomas
family.
Then I repeat, Thomas Jefferson had slaves.
And I would repeat that the public should not be paying to uphold somebody who has had that kind of background. You have private museums. You have other things that you may want to do that.
How far are you willing to take that? For example, King David killed a man to hide his adultery. Should we therefore get rid of the Psalms? Moses killed a man. Should we get rid of the Ten Commandments? Just curious. 757. Mark Schiff. Schiff's Riffs.
I have worked with Mark Schiff many years.
Oh, okay. It doesn't matter. We don't need any comedy today. The lady that dragged over the Confederate statue. Okay, so it looks like we're getting to a tipping point in here. And the tipping point, no pun on ripping over the statues, but the question is, how do we deal with our history? How do we deal with the past? How do we deal with the Civil War? The Civil War stands for itself. It defends itself. The right side, we would all agree, the right side of history won. They're trying to put a movie, a series on HBO. The same people, I think it's the same people that did The Walking Dead, are trying to put on or are going to put on a series that where the South won the Civil War and what the world looks like. And there's so much outrage out there. I'm a little bit uncomfortable removing this stuff, though, because what's the difference between that and then going back and removing everything objectionable? Are you going to get rid of the Psalms and the Bible? Are you going to get rid of the Ten Commandments? I mean, there's no perfect person in world history, and I think that we need to be aware of the fact that there are grave consequences to purifying history, and one of them is ignorance of who you are and where you came from, and another one is putting out the false narrative that there is the possibility of living a sin-free life or an error-free life. 7:59, have a great day. Kelly O'Connell, Death Row Radio continues for one last week next week. Have a great weekend. Ciao. Have I told you there's no one above you?